ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Welcome to Fuelcast. I'm Carrington Clark, and this is your source to stay on top of the numbers behind the ongoing global energy crisis. It's Wednesday, April the 10th. We're recording mid-morning. Let's have a look at the latest figures. The price of Brent crude has dropped. It's sitting at around $92 a barrel. The national average price of unleaded has dropped by 1 cent to $1.71 per litre. And the national average price of diesel has dropped to $2.14 per litre. Today, I'm joined by the ABC's chief business correspondent, Ian Verinder, to dig into those major energy headlines. Good morning, Ian.
Morning, Carrington.
Ian, let's start with the latest commentary from the Energy Minister, Chris Bowen. He's pointed out that actually Australia's supply of petrol, diesel and jet fuel are now higher than when the war began. Remember those concerns that we would run out if there were interruptions of supply. However, we also have a fuel excise cut about to, it appears, end, the lapsing of the cut the government put in early. Chris Bowen says we've got security of supply into August. How confident do you think Australians should be that, A, we're going to have enough fuel going forward, and B, that we're not going to see a massive jacking up of prices shortly?
Well, I mean, let's face it, we were totally undercooked when it came to security of supply before the war began. And that only really became apparent when hostilities broke out. So, yeah, look, we've got far better supplies lined up now. And you'd have to say the government's done a pretty good job in securing those extra supplies out of Asia, with a bit of muscle, you might have to say. You know, give us our liquid fuels or you won't get our gas. That was the underlying kind of message there. And of course, you know, governments don't ever get a pat on the back for doing anything good. They only get kicked in the guts when they mess up. So at least they haven't messed up on this one, which is good to see. I mean, it's still only a couple of months though, isn't it? It's August. And what did we see overnight? Yet another outbreak in hostilities. Mm. You know, it's the ceasefire you have when you're really not having a ceasefire. I mean, everybody's just firing away, really, aren't they? So a US helicopter down, and what's happened with oil prices globally? Nothing. So it's quite incredible, the lack of price action on global energy markets to what is actually going on in the Middle East, given there is so much of the world's supply locked up there and so much of the world's shipping locked up in there as well.
Yeah, I was watching this play out in real time on Radio National Breakfast, and I expected you would have seen some sort of impact on the futures price for Brent crude. It hardly moved, maybe 0.5% when we had word that America had once again launched strikes at Iran in retaliation to the downing of this Apache helicopter. It appears that markets are completely relaxed about the fact that the Strait of Hormuz is still effectively closed and that there hasn't been any concrete move towards peace. How much do you think that the lower prices has been in part because we have seen a lowering demand, particularly, say, in China when it comes to oil, but also this talk about that this particular oil supply shock has actually increased the motivation for electrification across the world.
Yeah.
And could that actually end up being one of the major lasting legacies of this particular conflict, that actually it has pushed along the electrification and a move away from oil?
Well, there's no doubt that the world has woken up to the fact that, you know, as we did in the 1970s when we had two oil shocks, oil price shocks, that, you know, supply is not guaranteed. And we are relying on, you know, parts of the world which are embedded in conflict to supply us with our energy needs. So that's a pretty strong motivation to change behaviour. But the ultimate signal, the ultimate drive to change behaviour is price.
Mm.
And so if the prices aren't going to respond to these kind of things, and I think global energy markets are at least optimistic in the idea that America is now looking for a way out, looking to try and, you know, resolve this situation. So that's what's keeping the optimism there. But there's no doubt that the impetus for electrification is gathering pace. I mean, you've only got to look at Australia and the rise in demand for electric vehicles. Now, battery vehicles are almost selling at the same pace as petrol vehicles in Australia. That's in the latest figures.
And that's a dramatic transformation for what we were seeing last year,
yeah,
where there was an argument that actually people are falling already out of love with electric vehicles, that people were having buyer's regret or something. That's all turned out to be completely incorrect, right?
And the manufacturers were shifting away from battery-only vehicles to hybrids, which they saw as a much better option. If you combine battery vehicles with hybrids, I mean, it's neck and neck with
50-50,
with fossil fuel-driven cars. And the trend is clearly heading, you know, you've got the demand for fossil fuels and the sales dropping quite sharply, and the demand for electric vehicles and hybrids rising very, very strongly. So clearly the signal is getting through to people. And I think, you know, what's happened in the Middle East in the past 3 or 4 months is a real wake-up call to the world.
Yeah, so the Energy Minister, Chris Bowen, has this fancy new title. He's president of COP31. Australia's not going to host the next COP, but
Adelaide missed out.
Adelaide missed out, but Chris Bowen keeps the job.
Yeah.
He gained the job, I should say. Now, he has called for a new global electrification target to rise to 35% by 2035. You know, nice, easy numbers to kind of remember there. That this, I think, would have been a harder argument, and it would have been completely couched in terms of the environment and the need to do this in order to mitigate the impact of climate change. But now it's the security argument, I think, is paramount for most countries, isn't it? Well, or at least a very important component, that people don't want to be reliant on other countries sending them fossil fuels. They want to be producing energy at home.
Particularly Europe. I mean, this is the second crunch that Europe's had. You know, when Russia invaded Ukraine, Russian gas basically stopped, you know, propelling or driving most of the European economy. And so as a result of that, they saw a massive increase in the price of gas, in the price of electricity. We saw it here too, which we shouldn't have, given we're a major gas exporter. But in Europe in particular, it was a major factor which really hit them hard, because they had spent years building pipelines from Russia through to Europe. And suddenly all of that was put into doubt. And now you've got this second whammy, all in the space of, what, 5-6 years. So I think most people in Europe would be looking for alternatives to fossil fuels. Whether they go back down the nuclear path is another question.
Which is what France seems to be doubling down on, their nuclear strategy, but obviously that's at odds with what Germany, who has moved away from it. You know, there's a long-standing aversion in Germany to nuclear power.
Well, it's very expensive to build as well. And so you've had arrangements in Europe where, particularly in France, where they were able to sell off their excess nuclear power to other countries in Europe, and that may not be the case into the future. So we're just not sure exactly how that is going to play out.
Yes, and there was an internal argument about whether or not nuclear power should be treated as renewable. That was a debate, particularly, I think, between France and Germany about how that would be treated for the kind of European grid, but it'll be one to watch, I think, going forward. Here in Australia, we are blessed with huge amounts of sunlight, wind capacity. We seem to be a pretty good place to build these renewable systems. A lot of places around the world would be very envious of our position.
Yeah, look, in Europe too, I mean, a lot of their renewables have been built in the wrong spots. I mean, they put solar up in the northern part of Europe where there's not a lot of sunlight, and put the wind farms in places where there's not a lot of wind. So, you know, not really market-driven.
Yes, well, let's hopefully we can get that sorted. That's it for this edition of Fuelcast. You can catch ABC Business Daily later today, and we'll be back in your feeds with all things fuel next week. Catch you next time, Ian.
Thanks, Carrington.